This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our UFC 312 post-show. I am John Pollock, and joining me bright and early on this Sunday morning, Eric Marcotte, joining us live from Sudbury, Ontario, where he is basking in the glow of UFC 312 from Sydney, Australia on Saturday evening. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. This was a card that I don't know how much fanfare was attached to it going into it. We will see what's coming out of it. And, you know, this was one you, on our last show, we didn't even want to verbally commit that we were going to be doing a show for this one. It was a game day decision for us earlier this week if we were going to proceed forward. We did because we are true pros. But let me guess, you did not have a countdown calendar in your room waiting until February 8th for UFC 312, did you?
Oh, not at all. I mean, I'm sitting here and, you know, I don't look forward to every UFC pay-per-view that they put out, but at the very least, there's usually something interesting that we can talk about after. I'm actually kind of dreading doing this show, John, because I have no idea what we're about to talk about.
Well, We are going to do our best to break down this card that did see two championship fights, some impressive performances, some not, and it was a night of 9 decisions of 12 fights.
That it was, and you really felt it.
Well, Eric, hold on. Okay, we're going to get through this one. We're going to get you to the finish line. I am determined, and we start off at the Kudos Bank Arena, where this card generating a gate of over $7.6 million at the Kudos Bank Arena. So this is a $7.6 million card. Was it an $80 pay-per-view, Eric? That's the question.
Like charging $80 for this is borderline criminal, honestly. Like the fight night event from 1 week ago was better on paper and in execution than this. This is kind of proof that the UFC can just do anything and it will result in financial success at this point, because this is, I think it really is at that level. We've seen Apex cards that have been more stacked than this one.
Yeah. I mean, this was, a card that, really rested upon these top two fights and what your level of interest was. And, you know, with the lead up in this particular week, like I thought there was just, like, so much negative press attached to UFC this week in light of the Bryce Mitchell comments and then, you know, Sean Strickland. And I mean, it kind of went even like unchecked. Just this comment he made about Li Jingliang, which was just like grotesque. But I mean, at the same time, much like Toronto, you know, this guy was just received like a complete hero to this audience. And do you feel, among this fan base, like, is Sean Strickland at that level now that he is somebody that is someone that people are going out of their way to buy pay-per-views for? Do you think he's just kind of ingrained into the UFC product? Like, where is the star level of a Sean Strickland?
I don't think a lot of people are going out of their way to watch Sean Strickland because his fights are generally not very entertaining. But I do think that your average UFC fan is quite into him as a personality. He gets huge reactions wherever he goes, not just in the States. You saw it on the Canada show. He was the biggest star in Australia. He's the biggest star. Like if you're the type of person who's attracted to MMA culture in 2025, Sean Strickland's probably your guy.
Yeah, it was. I'll just get this out of the way, though. Like, it is to me somewhat. It does feel somewhat disingenuous when it's like we use, like, on the broadcast, I'm stating, like, we use the most packaged language to describe this guy. Like, he really tells it like it is. He's polarizing. He's controversial. But we are not going to at all exactly replicate what exactly he says, what makes him so controversial. It's like this, like, it's like we're trying to present this this counterculture figure, but we don't really want to lean in on the exact typical language that he is using or what is the source of all of this. It's like we just kind of tap dance around all of this. It's just kind of eye rolling to me as a consumer.
And that just seems to be the UFC stance on a lot of these issues at this point. They aren't necessarily going to condone the things that Sean Strickland or Bryce Mitchell will say. In fact, oftentimes they'll even outright condemn it. But at the same time, they're never going to, you know, exercise any sort of restraint on advertising these fighters for vocalizing those beliefs, even when it's during fight week, during their press tours.
It's putting up that newspaper cover, and it's like it's Sean's, the UFC account just pushed this the cover of this newspaper in Australia out with Sean Strickland. It's like fighter goes off on racist tirade. It's like they just throw it out there, like no context. It's just like I think they understand, like we will not condone this, but we will also find promotional value in this too as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's been their tact for a few years now, and probably to general success, I'd say. I mean, I think it's largely worked in getting some of these, I don't even know how you describe them, but your wilder personalities, to put it mildly, over with the fan base. I mean, it's shown, like, Sean Strickland goes out here and he has some of the dullest fights that you will ever see, and he is beloved at this point.
Well, that's going to segue us into this main event between Dricus du Plessis and Sean Strickland, once again on international terrain, as their first fight took place at UFC 297 last year, a very close decision win for Dricus du Plessis, that I, on the night of, had scored 48-47 for Dricus du Plessis. There was definitely a debate coming out of it. I was certainly more of the camp that, yes, this was a close fight. I can't say it was like this dramatic chess match or that I was just jonesing for this rematch either. But that was like some of the discussion. I'm sorry. After this fight, I do not want to hear the, oh, bull, it was compelling. This was not a great fight. Like, flat out, this was not a great fight. And in Sean Strickland, he outlined all of his problems in the first fight, that, you know, he fights these rounds so close, he has to increase his output, and he can't leave these coin flip rounds to the judges because he's putting himself in a position to lose. And his corner, Eric Nixick, was so frustrated throughout, and Strickland just could not shift gears. He was just stuck in this, and I thought he got blanked 5-0, and I did not think this was a great fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. I scored every round for Dricus du Plessis. And I do think Sean Strickland's lack of activity was what killed him here. Usually he's a very active fighter, even if it's, you know, a fairly basic offense, moving forward, making fighters uncomfortable with his constant pressure. He's always going. He was on the back foot a lot here against Dricus du Plessis, who, you know what? I did think he looked very good throughout this fight. Like I said, this wasn't super entertaining or anything, but I've been impressed with his growth as a fighter. Just, I remember watching him fight, I think it was like Darren Till a few years ago, just thinking, well, he's already reached his ceiling as a fighter. And then he beats Robert Whittaker, and it's like, was it kind of a fluke? Maybe. now at this point, he's firmly established himself. And I do find him to be interesting to watch. He does a lot of unique things in the octagon, just his style of movement, the way he throws his strikes. There's not a lot of fighters who move like him. And I thought he was good in this fight. Unfortunately, we didn't really get to see a lot from Sean Strickland here.
Yeah, this guy was... They stated that on Tuesday when he arrived during fight week, Du Plessis was around 215 pounds and he was looking all of that and more in this case. Like this guy was a heavyweight in this fight. He just looked gigantic. And you know, the first two rounds I thought were very close rounds and they were, I didn't have enough that I felt there was a compelling argument for Strickland in any. It was more so just a real feeling out process and Strickland trying to establish his jab. But with Du Plessis, you know, he just found a lot of his range with his various kicks and going to the body. And Strickland, like he's after two rounds, like you can really hear the corner that is just telling him, like, you've got to get busier. This is a repeat of the first fight and you know how that one went. And the third round was a stronger one for Du Plessis is the one getting busier. And there's a spinning back fist by Du Plessis, constant kicks to the body. And then we start spinning. He hits a spinning elbow and then there's a takedown at the end of the round. Into the fourth we go and Du Plessis lands probably the best shot of the entire fight with this nasty right hand. And dude, Sean Strickland's nose went off like the 4th of July fireworks. It exploded on his face and he's got believed to be a broken nose, which he stated after the fight. He then adjusted and put back into place. So take that, Finn Balor, getting staples in the middle of a Hell in a Cell match. DDP then rocks him with another right hand minutes later, and he's just continuing. The fourth, I thought, was a very, very strong round for Du Plessis, and he continued in the fifth. Like, this was just, Strickland could not establish another gear. He made it through 25 minutes, but again, I did not feel he won any of these rounds. The scores were 50-45 twice, 49-46, and Dricus Du Plessis wins his ninth fight in a row in the UFC, 11th overall. And now we are, like, Sean Strickland is comfortably in the rear view of Dricus Du Plessis. And I think at this point, you start to have real conversations about Dricus Du Plessis in terms of establishing himself as one of the top middleweights in UFC history behind your Anderson Silvas and Israel Adesanyas that he now owns a win over. And that's kind of that fight for number two that Dricus Du Plessis could be in a real discussion for this year.
Yeah. I think the 1-2 punch of wins over Adesanya and Whitaker, who I think are probably your two best post-Anderson Silva middleweights, is something that really stands out on that resume, finishing them both at that. I mean, longevity comes down to it. I mean, I think we'll get into it, but we're probably looking at Khamzat Chimaev as his next opponent. That'll be a very tough test. If he's the guy who beats...
Where will that
be? Yeah, where? probably on Fight Island, maybe. But if that is his next test and he were to win that fight, I think that'd be another very impressive notch.
Maybe we'll get back-to-back executive orders where they outlaw the Ali Act in boxing and then they greenlight Khamzat Chimaev to fight anywhere in the U.S.
I could genuinely see that happening, honestly. I think, you know what? I'll go on record here and I say I think we see Khamzat Chimaev make his way onto a U.S. card in 2025.
I think that's very much in the expected locations for him this year because, yeah, when we're looking at things, I mean, it's Chimaev or who? Imavov at this point? Like, those are your options here, and certainly Khamzat is the preferred option that you're going to be going with. So, listen, I didn't think this was a great fight, but for Dricus Du Plessis, I mean, it was one of those fights where the first one was close, the second one was not. Like, he stamped it on this. And for a Sean Strickland, I think he's going to be given plenty of opportunities. I just cannot see this guy working his way back to a title fight as long as Dricus Du Plessis is champion. I mean, him getting back to a title fight, we just went over the contenders. It's not like it's this impossible road back for Sean Strickland, and he's going to have a lot, I think, of fanfare to still stay in that top mix. But you know, there is a very clear delineation between him and the championship level of this division. And this fight was really 25 minutes of that being played out.
Yeah, certainly, at least to an extent. I mean, middleweight is kind of wide open in a sense right now, just as you're seeing your big names from the past 5 to 6 years finally on the decline. I mean, it wouldn't shock me to see Strickland versus Whitaker next, for example. That's a fight that hasn't happened yet, so I could certainly see them going in that direction. I hope we never see Sean Strickland versus Driscus Duplessis again. I didn't even watch the first one. I was going to. I thought I should do my due diligence and I should watch that fight before watching this one. And then I really thought about it. And I thought, am I going to spend 50 minutes of my life watching these guys fight? And the answer is no. So
those are called priorities, Eric, and we all respect you for maintaining them. There you go. That was your main event of the show. Spoiler, was not given the fight of the night bonus.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Zhang Weili, Tatiana Suarez for the UFC Strawweight Championship. This is the fight I was most intrigued by coming into this card for the Tatiana Suarez story. And for those that are, you know, not familiar, like, here is somebody that was like an extremely high level wrestler that won the world championships, was considered like an Olympic hopeful, and then ends up getting thyroid cancer in her 20s, comes back, wins the Ultimate Fighter, and seemed to be like a surefire future champion. And she just was riddled with injuries, a debilitating neck injury. Then she destroyed her knee and she's missed so much time. And coming back, it's kind of like there's an irony in that we're talking a lot about Dominic Cruz this week. Like, there are some parallels there with Tatiana Suarez. You know, Dominic Cruz did become a champion. Tatiana Suarez has not, but, you know, two fighters that just lost so much time due to injury. And they just decided, you know what, let's just put her in the title fight. And she hasn't competed in a year and a half. And this just seemed to be, well, let's see if she can win this championship. And ended up, she closed as the favorite going into this fight. How did you feel prior to, in terms of Tatiana Suarez and her chances in this fight?
Much like you, this was the fight I was most interested in this card. I was happy to see it actually come together. But I did think those odds were absolutely insane. I mean, Tatiana Suarez has looked fantastic in all of her fights, including the ones in her relatively recent comeback against Montana De La Rosa and Jessica Andrade. But I had no idea why she was the betting favorite here against Zhang Weili, who, I mean, if this was pre the second Rose Namajunas fight for Zhang, I could see looking at wrestling as a potential weakness for her, but she has spent so much time in the last, 4 years improving her wrestling. And now we've got to a point where you could argue that's the strongest aspect of her game, that I just didn't see a world where she could be considered the underdog going into this. I thought this would be quite the task for Tatiana Suarez.
Yeah, it really was. And this was, like, first of all, just an incredible performance by Zhang Weili. Like, yes, she is always going to be linked with the Joanna Jędrzejczyk fight, but in terms of a bell-to-bell performance, like, this blew me away. Like, she was so good. The key stat here for Tatiana Suarez that tells you everything about this fight, 1-for-15 on takedowns. I mean, that was an incredible game plan that Zhang had here to be able to eliminate the wrestling, and you really felt Suarez just, once the wrestling was not going to be a factor, she just had to kind of, she was just in reactionary mode for so much of this. And it was Zhang Weili that was controlling so much of the pace of this fight. The first round, I mean, there were barely any strikes thrown. In fact, Zhang Weili outlanded her 1-0 in the first round. But it was Suarez getting her one and only takedown in this fight, and kind of attempted a guillotine, but Zhang gained top position by the end. It was a round that honestly you could have flipped a coin over, but I thought this was a Tatiana Suarez round, but this was also like the least eventful of the five rounds. And then Zhang just turned it up in round number two. Unfortunately, Suarez injured her knee in the midst of a takedown attempt where they showed the replay and she hit the base of the fence and sliced her knee. And this looked brutal. Like, this looked like this was going to require many stitches to close up. When was the last time you can recall such a cut that was not administered by the opponent in a fight? Because this was a brutal looking cut that I'm sure, I am not making any excuses here, I don't think this was changing the outcome of the fight, but this was a really nasty cut that she had to deal with.
Yeah, totally. This was, I'm trying to give some thought to your question of the last time.
I can't think about it. Like, yeah, there's the crazy Kevin Randleman slipping backstage story, but in terms of like a, you know, of like a piece of equipment in the octagon causing such a, such an injury here, like, I was kind of stumped just trying to think of like when a fighter has had to deal with this that is of no credit to the opponent administering it to you.
The only thing I can think of, and I am furious at myself for not being able to recall the fighters who were in it, but I remember there was one fight where very early on, like, fighter A runs at fighter B and kind of goes into the cage and gets his toe lodged in the bottom of the cage, and it leads to like an immediate stoppage. That's the only one that's coming to mind to me, and I'm so mad at myself for not remembering who the fighters are in it right now.
But, like, yeah, Matt Lindland, I remember once, like, I think it was Baroni, where he slammed Phil Baroni and like kind of like knocked himself out.
But
again, that's not like an equipment malfunction. That's just, you know, the way you took somebody down and smashed your head. But this, if you, they showed some close-ups of this cut, and dude, it looked just brutal. And that was, you know, what she was dealing with here. But it's Zhang here landing some really big strikes and takes her to the ground and is in Suarez's guard. And this, you know, Zhang just had all of the wrestling figured out here. And Suarez, even when she would go for the takedown, I mean, she's just thwarting them left, right, and center. Or she would just land on top with these great-looking reversals. She's landing elbows in close range in the third while mixing in some head kicks as well. The fourth, Suarez lands with her best combination so far. And there's an inside trip by Zhang and lands on top. This being notable, it was the first time that a takedown has ever been credited against Tatiana Suarez in the UFC. And so Zhang is threatening with an arm triangle, but Suarez gets her into her guard to escape the threat. And then Zhang just remains in the guard, continuing with tons of ground strikes. And in the fifth, it's Zhang just continuing here. She is defending more takedowns, works into half guard, takes the back of Suarez at one point, and just kind of dominates her way to the finish. This fifth round was kind of knocking on 10-8 territory for me, but I went 10-9 and 49-46 for Zhang Weili, which is what two judges had. One judge, 49-45 for your strawweight champion, Zhang Weili, with I think maybe one of her, if not her best performance in the UFC.
Yeah, her streak of like her last five performances have just been so impressive, and this might have been the most impressive yet. I mean, not only did she beat Suarez on the feet here, but she outgrappled her for the majority of the
easily.
Fight.
Yeah,
seemingly with ease. It didn't seem difficult for her at all. There were some parts in like the fifth round where Suarez was trying so hard to get a takedown, and she had Zhang like on one leg and was trying to sweep that leg out, and she just couldn't get it was like Jose Aldo level takedown.
Yeah, she was just balancing on the one leg. I mean this was just a remarkable performance to watch for someone like a Tatiana Suarez, that if you were watching her from Tough and beyond, like some of those fights, like she was just like it just felt like this is like a female Cain Velasquez, was that she was going to be just this dominant force at 115 pounds. And to see someone just out wrestle here, like I was just so impressed with all of this. It also and like there's no indication of this, but it does also bring up the question, Eric, that if a Tatiana Suarez in the lead up to this had any type of injury, is there any way she could have pulled out of this fight? Like, I almost feel it's like there's no way she could have as well. And again, there's no indication of any kind of injury going into this, but this was, you know, a Tatiana Suarez that just, it was not her night. That's as charitable as you can say.
Just an excellent performance from Zhang. I wonder what will be next for Tatiana Suarez. Obviously, staying healthy is such a difficult task for her. I wonder if this may even be the last time we see her in the octagon. I don't know.
She's 34 at this juncture. We also had the discussion that Zhang Weili's passport says she is 35, but she maintains she is 34. Her passport is incorrect, but the graphics went with her passport. But John Anik did note
betrayal.
Yeah, so I mean, don't accuse her of being 35 until she is don't view her passport as any kind of a official document. But the big discussion after this was Zhang Weili not facing the next strawweight contender, but rather a fight with Valentina Shevchenko, which, why not at this point? I mean, for both, these are not two divisions that are exactly thriving with big fights to make. I guess short term, that maybe is the best option for both. Do you like that fight?
Yeah, of course, go for it. I mean, I don't know what the other option even is at this point. Would you do like Verna Jandaroba? I mean, sure, go for it. But no, I'd rather see Zhang versus Shevchenko. I think Zhang would probably be a healthy favorite at this point going into that one too.
What about Yasmin Lucindo?
Where is Lucindo ranked right now?
She would be seventh at this point. Of people that Zhang has not beat, we have Virnie Jandiroba, which would be the next viable contender. Amanda Lemos, Yasmin Lucindo. I mean, we could get deep into, you know, Tabitha Ricci territory.
I don't think so.
I think we've just booked Valentina Shevchenko and Zhang Weili next.
Yeah.
So that would be the most likely outcome to happen later on this year. All right. Well, let's move on down. And, you know, I imagine that Eric, much like me, had tuned in for the early prelims. And boy, this deep into the main card, we were looking for a finish. And the debuting Taliesin Teixeira gave us that. The 25-year-old who has finished every fight in the first round. He came off the Contender Series last September. This dude is 6'7" at heavyweight, taking on Justin Taffa, who is a 500 level fighter in the UFC, but has won three of his last five coming into this. Well, that streak was going to end because Taliesin Teixeira put him up against the fence and gave him the right elbow from hell and finished this guy in seconds. That being 35 seconds, Taliesin Teixeira getting the TKO victory and one of the fastest finishes for a debuting UFC fighter that they did show us a graphic for. Justin Taffa was pissed about this stoppage, but dude, this guy went down like a ton of bricks when this hit. I cannot hold the referee in too much criticism here for calling this. Rich Mitchell, I was fine with the stoppage.
Yep, stoppage was fine. Teixeira is absolutely massive. I don't know what else there is to say about that. Like, why is Justin Taffa on a pay-per-view?
This was our third fight from the top. Okay, folks, this was our pay-per-view $80 card. Okay, so I mean, so far I'm placing like $18 in value on this card, and that's all due to this strawweight fight that I was interested in.
We should all be blessed that the fight was as quick as it is, because there were not a lot of finishes on this card.
Nope, including the returning Jimmy Crute, who has not fought since July of 2023. He had to step away because, as the announcers explained, he had an unhealthy obsession with mixed martial arts.
Okay, sure. Yeah, whatever.
I think a lot of fans could probably take that to heart, perhaps. So Jimmy Crute, you know, this unhealthy obsession. So he has come back, taking on Rodolfo Bellotto at light heavyweight.
So stupid. What are we talking about? He has an unhealthy obsession with mixed martial arts. This encompassing job that he's, this career path that he's chosen for himself.
Listen, if you dropped $80 on this card, you have an unhealthy obsession with mixed martial arts. That would be my diagnosis. So, and not to say we're excluded either, because here we are on Sunday morning talking about Rodolfo Bellotto. But Jimmy Crute, I mean, in the first round, I mean, he looked great here. Great grappling. He dropped him with a right hand, nearly ended the fight, landing with elbows on top. I had this a 10-8 round, but then Bellotto came around in the second round using a lot of calf kicks, went for a spinning heel kick at the end, and then in the third round, close, but it was, Crute just lunging with his right hand, and Bellotto got the takedown, and close round, but I thought that Bellotto got rounds 2 and 3. So I had it a draw, as did two judges, and one had it 29-27 for Crute. So it was a majority draw.
I love majority draws. And honestly, it was the right call for this one. I had it as a draw as well. Definitely a 10-8 first round, but I thought Bellotto took the next two. Close, competitive, but decisive. Every time I tried to write his name, my phone auto-corrected it to Bellator. Anyways, that's all I got.
Yeah, I mean, it reads like this is like kind of the legacy of Bellator is going to be Rodolfo here. Also sounds like a late 90s like dance club you would go to. Like, where are all the boys meeting up this Saturday night? We're going to Bellotto. You want to meet us at Bellotto? Okay,
yeah,
cool. We're going to grab something to eat at Jimmy Crute's first.
You're on a roll.
Yeah. Are they going to run this one back? I think this could headline their return to Australia. This is fighting quality. Is this worthy of the Apex?
Oh, yeah, this is totally worthy.
Five-round main event. Fun.
Okay. Yeah, I spoke too soon.
Then we had Jake Matthews competing in his 21st fight in the UFC. This is where I feel old, because I remember this guy debuting in the UFC looking like he was David Finlay right out of the New Japan Dojo. Okay, that's how young this kid looked. And now he's filled out his frame. He's also got God knows how many tattoos as well. And just fallen in love with boxing, because that's what this whole fight was for three rounds with 22-year-old Francisco Prado, who is moving up from lightweight to compete at welterweight. And as Heidi Andral instructed us, a happy Francisco Prado is a dangerous Francisco Prado.
Okay.
didn't quite play out that way. He probably was not too happy of a Francisco Prado when they clashed heads in the first round and he got cut open and had to deal with this throughout the fight. But Prado did get a takedown in the first. They traded in the center. The story of this fight was just so much of this was done in the pocket, and Jake Matthews was just quicker to the punch in all of these exchanges. Matthews was landing with a lot of uppercuts in round two while also mixing to the body. Third round, they're both exchanging, and there's a left hook that lands for Matthews, and then they clinch, they would reset, and it's Matthews ending with a big knee to the body at the end. He wins all three rounds, and Jake Matthews calls his shot. He's got a pay-per-view audience. Neil Magny, I've called you out so many times. Where are you? People demand Jake Matthews, Neil Magny in 2025. And that is the trajectory. That's what he wants for fight number 22 in the UFC.
Yeah, that seems like a Neil Magny sort of fight, doesn't it, Jake Matthews? I was in the same boat as you. I can't believe how many fights Jake Matthews has had at this point. Like, time really does fly. He's had a lot of success at welterweight. He's never quite gone on that run to get him into the rankings, but he's kind of been knocking at the door for almost his entire welterweight run. We're getting to that point where I think we've probably seen his ceiling, but you never know for sure. So, I mean, I don't even know if Neil Magny's a ranked fighter anymore, but sure, go for it.
Speaking of which, it's trivia time. Outside of our two title fights, how many ranked fighters were on this card?
Shit. I'm going to say zero.
Ding, ding, ding.
$80.
$80. Okay. So listen, if this is a fight night, I'm not being as critical, but listen, pay-per-view, there's a certain expectation level. And listen, a lot of times after one of these cards, like maybe you'll get a ton of great finishes. And then Dana does the whole people dog this card, these morons. There wasn't that I told you so statement after this. This was a card that was kind of dog going into it and coming out of it, kind of justifiably so. Can we be honest?
Of course, but that will never stop the people who look at every single horrible card and say, but the worst cards are always the best cards.
No one watched it, so... Anyway, let's get into these prelims because, man, this is going to blow everyone's mind. Up first, Jack Jenkins against Gabriel Santos. Going into the third round that this one went, Jenkins nearly finished him with a head kick in the first round, but Santos did recover well. He had Charles Oliveira in his corner, and he's going for this triangle. Jenkins survives it, and then it's Santos with a takedown into half guard and landing short elbows. So, I mean, Santos did recover well, and I saw some people give Santos this round, but I'm sorry. When you nearly get finished with a head kick, you are not winning that round unless you do something equal, if not more debilitating to swing the round. So Jenkins won the first. Second round, though, Santos is the one with the renewed confidence. He gets the takedown. He's working in half guard, and it's kind of his submission threats that are the key here. And Jenkins kind of just had this adrenaline dump after not getting the finish in the first. This continued in the third. Santos channeling Sensei Steven Seagal with a front kick to the face, and Jenkins withstands that, but Santos gets to the back, applying a body triangle, and submits him at 2 minutes and 6 seconds of the third round. So big come from behind win for Gabriel Santos after nearly getting KO'd in round number one.
I thought this was one of the more entertaining fights on the card, especially the first round. The first round is pretty wild, actually. Much like yourself, I can't possibly rationalize giving Santos the round despite his late comeback, but it didn't matter in the end. He got the finish.
Then we're going to Tom Nolan against Vyacheslav Borsov, a member of Team Alpha Male, who goes by the nickname of... Slava Claus and wears a Santa hat.
Yes, he does.
Clever.
It's good. It's pretty good.
What are we doing here, Eric? What are we doing?
I don't know.
Nolan leaps onto his back in the first round, and Borshov falls back. Nolan's going for a darce, but loses it, as is Eric here. Borshov gets his striking going late in the round. So I liked watching Tom Nolan in this fight. I mean, this was a fine prelim performance. Borshov is kicking at the leg and body, but Nolan's hitting with a lot of body kicks and spinning attacks. And then finally, Nolan gets a takedown off the fence. He's trying for the guillotine, and then Nolan just jabs and... there's a spin kick by Borshev near the end. Third round, another Nolan round here where he comes out strong. Borshev got him into half guard, and then Borshev gets cut open. And Nolan, the best part of this fight was Borshev in the final minute trying to go for a leg lock, and Tom Nolan just like laughs uproariously against, like, you've got to be kidding me if you think you're going to catch me with a leg kick or with a leg lock in 2025 and on me. So Tom Nolan cruising to a unanimous decision win, 30-27, 29-28, 29-28, and afterwards, Tom Nolan really endorsed Vyacheslav Borsov as the toughest guy he's ever fought, and he was nervous accepting this fight, but a nice win here for Tom Nolan.
Yeah, I thought those up kicks were pretty good.
Oh, he had several big up kicks here that blasted Borsov in this fight. So this is the one that Eric's going to be thinking about for months to come. Then we had Wong Tan versus Bruna Brazil at flyweight. This fight. Okay. Wong Tan won this convincingly because Bruna Brazil basically did not show up for this fight. I cannot say anything more kind other than, like, this was someone that just felt like at a certain point in this fight was totally checked out of it. And Tan was just so much more aggressive. Brazil looked good for the first half of the first round, and that's about it. Tan was annihilating her with inside leg kicks, all variety of leg kicks. It was pretty one-sided in the second round, tons of evading by Brazil. And they mentioned that, you know, the crowd is, they're not quite into this. And Daniel Cormier, yeah, because this hasn't been great. And then Tan picks up with her kicks. Brazil is just like running away from her. There's a takedown by Tan at the end. She wins every round. Just a poor performance by Bruna Brazil. Like one of those performances where you really question afterwards if she's someone that would be brought back. This just felt, I just thought like this was a very one-sided fight.
This is like the low-level unranked version of Driscus Duplessis versus Sean Strickland too.
Yeah, I'm not going to disparage them by comparing to this, but it was not great. Not great. Colby Thickness was next. Slickness Thickness. This guy has the wildest legit last name against Alexander Topuria, the older brother of Ilya Topuria. So we were going to see what was the deal here with the elder Topuria, who is 29 years of age and has had some big sabbaticals throughout his career. And I mean, this was a fight where Thickness just took this fight on very short notice. He was the Hex bantamweight champion as well. You know, Topuria was just going to the body immediately, pretty much German suplexes dude at the end of the round. In the second, he continues with rights to the body and is breaking down Thickness. In the third, more wrestling from Topuria. Thickness gets free and starts to connect when Topuria just wrestles him to the mat, gets to half guard and then to the back and controls him. 30-27 across the board for Topuria. So, fine win for him. The last name will help him, I think, in gaining attention. But it was, it was not a memorable fight either.
No, it wasn't fantastic, but Topuria looked decent. I don't know what you can make of his skill set. If you just like look at the level of competition he's faced, you can't really draw a lot from that. But for what it's worth, he's looked impressive against the opposition he's faced thus far.
He had a test in front of him, and he passed with flying colors is the best you can say here. All right, we're going to get a little more positive here because then we had the easiest fight of the night winner in Rong Zhu versus Cody Steele. Steele fights out of Syndicate MMA. He won on Contender Series last October. Rong Zhu is 25-6. He is 24 years old.
That is absolutely ridiculous. I think I missed his age. I had no idea. Wow.
It was insane. So Steele immediately forces, and by the way, Cody Steele was a -340 favorite coming into this fight as well. So Steele forces the takedown, but Rong Zhu gets the reversal and back to their feet. And now Rong Zhu is landing with a left hook. Both just start swinging wildly. Steele rocks him and follows with a series of knees, but then Rong Zhu blasts him with this counter left, follows with an uppercut. They are throwing everything at one another. It ends with this big barrage. This round was amazing, this first round.
This was so entertaining. Like by mile, this was the fight of the night. Even if the fight ended in this first round here, it would have won.
Yeah. What was the Jim Cornette line? Is like they stole the show, but it would be considered a petty theft on a show like this.
Yeah. So, well said.
Second round. Cody Steele gets dropped, and I had to rewind it. It was a jab that put this guy down. It was just this huge power jab. And then Rong Zhu tries to fight his way free after Steele is grabbing hold of his leg. Rong Zhu's using his left hand from all different types of angles and continues with his jab. into the third. Steele is trying to dig for the body, but Rongju keeps him at distance with his jab. And then there's a leg kick combo. And then the two, this is just going to be the thing that fighters do in the final 10 seconds of fights like this. They just throw caution to the wind and unload. And Rongju absolutely could have gotten knocked out here. I mean, they just threw with absolute no abandon. And Rongju wins the third round. He wins all three rounds. Easy fight of the night winner, and a really, really great fight. And in particular, round one was just, it was sensational. So this was the high point of the whole show for me.
Yeah, I thought the third round was fantastic too. This was just a really fun fight, and one of the very few highlights of this lengthy $80 event.
Yeah, this could have, and this was only the third fight of the show. And I was like, you know what, we could be in for some under the radar performances tonight. And some of that came true, but more not. Kevin Jussé versus Jonathan Mikhailov at welterweight. Jussé fighting out of City Kickboxing, and Mikhailov from Australia, coming off a submission on the Contender Series last October. So we see Mikhailov winning the first two rounds here. He dropped Jussé with a head kick, but Jussé did recover. Let's just talk about Kevin Jussé. His body was just ravaged by kicks. This guy looked like Sheamus after like a chop battle, but it was like to his ribs and the side of his body. Mikhailov is using his left hand and really had a ton of success with it. Into the third round, Jussé goes to the body. He's finally landing with some kicks. It was Jussé's best round, but still close. Jonathan Mikhailov wins by unanimous decision, 29-28 across all three judges.
I actually had a fairly different scorecard for this one. I ended up with 30-26 for Mikhailov here. I gave him a 10-8 for that first round.
Okay, well, yeah. He did drop him with a head kick, so fair enough. We could use some dissent here for some of these undercard fights. So yeah, Jonathan Mikhailov, a nice win for him, buried here in the early prelims. So, and the night started off with Quillen Salkild knocking out Anshul Jubilee in 19 seconds after Salkild faints with the jab and this right hand drops Jubilee. And Jubilee was not too happy with referee Jim Perdios as he was protesting the finish. I could see some of that. He was at least trying to recover, and Perdios stepped in. But the fight ends in 19 seconds. And I was like, man, maybe this is going to be like that Australia fight night card. Do you remember? It was the card where Rockhold and Bisping had their first fight, and it was like all finishes. It
was one of the best fight nights ever. Yeah.
One of the best fight nights ever in Australia. And that was what I had like, memories of after this first fight. And, could I have been more wrong? So there you have it, everybody. Quillen Salkild.
Yep.
Victor. Yep. Yeah, awesome. 8-1, -520 favorite coming through. So there you have it. That was UFC 312, a card that we will continually talk about, probably with sarcastic notes attached to it. But that was the card for them. As we mentioned, fight of the night going to appropriately Rongju and Cody Steele. Performance of the night bonuses to Taliesin Teixeira and Quillen Salkild for $50,000 each. And that was that. Afterwards, at the press conference, Dana White was asked about Valentina, and Zhang Wei Li seemed to be something he was definitely open toward, and that was certainly what they were leaning into. Dana also discovered pillow fighting while he was in Australia, and he said, "You guys better never make fun of Power Slap again." After I saw pillow fighting on TV here in Australia, I was like, "No, people will absolutely make fun of Power Slap." That's
I'm sorry. I don't know. What was your favorite part of the night? I liked the Robert Whittaker's swimming with the sharks. I thought that was.
Yeah. Did you like all the not so subtle tourism integration? We got to see Dricus Duplessis learn how to surf as we got to see ads for Visit Sydney.
When
you're getting paid millions to bring an event over, I mean, that's part of the agreement.
Non-ironically, my favorite part of the show. I enjoyed all of those ads more than I enjoyed the bulk of the fights.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for surviving UFC 312 with me. I couldn't do this without you. But you know what? We're past UFC 312, and man, do we have some big Apex cards coming up in the next little while. Next weekend, they return to their favorite building. with Jared Cannonier against Gregory Rodriguez and Calvin Kattar versus Yusuf Zalal in the top two fights. The next week, they are taking a fight night on the road. Very special occasion. They're going to Seattle, Washington, no longer featuring Dominic Cruz's retirement fight. Instead, we will get Henry Cejudo against Song Yadong and Brendan Allen against Anthony Hernandez. Michael Chiesa against To Be Determined. TBD is somebody that I've had a lot of, I've heard a lot of hype about. Gets really, gets booked very heavily.
Very unreliable. Though.
Very unreliable. Always pulls out at the end. And then we go back to the Apex on March 1st, where they have lost their main event and currently listed as Cody Brundage against Julian Marquez. I hope that main event stays together. And next month, UFC 313 back at the T-Mobile Arena. Let us look at this card, okay, and compare. We've got at least the top two fights here. Alex Pereira and Magomed Ankalaev for the light heavyweight title. Yes, it's Alex Pereira, but if you're telling me this fight's going to be a barn burner, I can't promise that. Justin Gaethje against Dan Hooker for five rounds. That should be,
that's going to be a barn burner.
That should be pretty high quality. Bruno Gustavo da Silva versus Joshua Van. What could be the ultimate strawweight eliminator? Amanda Lemos versus Yasmin Lucindo. Marion Santos versus Francis Marshall. Your guy Carlos Leal taking on Alex Morno. Armin Petrosian versus Bruno Ferreira. Gene Matsumoto versus Chris Gutierrez. Jordan Ribeiro dos Santos versus Osman Diaz. And then Bobby King Green against Mauricio Rufi.
Well, I think that's a better card than this one. That's still not fantastic, especially.
How much would you pay for that card? Okay. If this card I priced at $18 tonight for UFC 312, how much is this one?
I think you can sell that one at a solid $40.
$40 card. Okay.
Alex Pereira, maybe the biggest star in the sport. You're getting a Justin Gaethje fight. I think you can push that pretty far.
Do those two fights stay intact?
I'll be optimistic and go with yes.
I think they will too. I don't think we're going to have anyone. But like Alex Pereira, let's be honest, the guy could probably have his leg amputated and he'd be like, I can still make middleweight even without a leg.
And I have a feeling that Magomed Ankalaev will not be giving up this opportunity. Because if he gets this up,
he will be in Armand Sarukian territory if he gives up this fight before it occurs. All right, so there you go. That is UFC 313, and that's going to wrap up the show. Thanks to everybody for tuning in on this Sunday morning as we went through what was not a blockbuster card. But hey, if you're just cherry picking, can't go wrong with Cody Steele and Rong Zhu. That would be, and the performance of Zhang Weili. I would put those as, some of the highlights of this show. Thank you, Eric Marcotte, most of all, for joining me. We will be back March the 9th for UFC 313, pending Eric's approval. I kind of let him, this is like at the end of one of these post shows. It's like Dana White being asked about a fight at the press conference. It's like, we'll talk about it on Tuesday. Okay. We don't make fights on fight night. So I will check in with Eric in a couple of weeks and make sure.
If we were here to do this pay-per-view, I mean,
do we have a rock bottom?
Yeah. Evidently not. I mean, we were talking about doing the GFL show, okay? We there's no lows that we won't sing.
Oh, we're going to do that GFL show, okay? I'm going to, barring any other commitments that weekend, I think it's the weekend before WrestleMania, if I have it. I say that all with the caveat that I can't even go 50-50 that card is going to take place. I'm more like 30-70 that fight takes place. And a second show, it's 5% chance of happening.
I think we see the first one, okay? I think we do see one GFL card. Two GFL cards?
Okay, well, I'm going to commit to watching that GFL show with Eric, so let us see. Where it will air, maybe we'll have to find out what this GFL app is that they have mentioned, that if they don't have a TV deal, we do have an app. I mean, my God, folks, get the marshmallows out, because there's going to be a bonfire called the Global Fight League. But that is it for us. Thank you for tuning into our UFC 312 review, and we'll chat with you next month. This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.